Well, this morning we continue our Freedom Friday series. We're visiting this morning with Carl Aldag of Atlantic, who joins us here. We're going to talk a little bit about his service time and also an opportunity that he was able to experience here not too long ago. Carl, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in this morning.
You bet.
I appreciate it very much. You're an Air Force guy.
That's correct.
What got you into the Air Force back in the day?
Well, it's probably a long story for me because when I was in high school, I had a classmate who always wanted to go to the service and see the world, either that or he was going to live in Wyota. So that was probably his. And then he and a friend, another friend of mine, Bill Morgan, they got working together in the grocery store. And of course, Bill was a couple years older than we were, so he always kept track of the draft board because he didn't want to go to the Army. So we decided that we would enlist in the service, and the branch we were interested in is the Air Force, and I don't think there's any particular reason for that. Just didn't have to go out and march all the time. So anyway, that's where we went. So anyway, Bill kept pretty close track of the draft board at that time, and he got a call one day that his number was probably going to be up, and so he called Mac and I, and we decided we should go to Omaha and enlist in the Air Force. Well, you know, I'm 19 years old, live in Atlantic, Iowa, don't have any particular reason not to, so I decided to go with them. We went over one day and enlisted in the Air Force and went back a couple of weeks later to report for duty, and one of them, Mac Taylor, didn't pass his physical, so he's the one that's idea to join the service. But then, so Bill and I joined the service in September 1950.
Were your parents supportive?
Well, they were after I explained it to them, but unfortunately for me, when I enlisted in the service, they were in California on vacation, so when they got back, I told them it probably wasn't the best day of my life.
Is there a history of service in your family?
Not a bit.
Not a bit.
My dad was scheduled for the First World War, but it was over with before he got called up.
Very good. So this was an entirely new experience for you.
That's for sure.
No
one to hear stories from.
Was it very common? I know some kids these days without, you know, with no draft anymore, they've lived their lives not understanding the draft. But, you know, some kids always grew up afraid that their number was going to come up at some point in time. And yet I talked to so many people from the World War II, the Korean War era, even Vietnam, who actually went out and enlisted instead of cowering in fear that their numbers might come up. Did that ever really occur much to you, that just wait around for your turn?
No, I guess once you enlist, I was 19 years old, so I was probably 2 years away from the draft. So that really hadn't entered my mind. You know, I find that when you're 19 year old, your thought process is a lot different than when you're middle aged or later in life.
Absolutely, absolutely. So where'd you go? You enlisted, you got yourself organized, and they shipped you off. Where'd you go?
Well, I enlisted and went to Omaha, and they put us on a train. We had a 2-day train trip to Lackland Air Force Base, Texas. That was where we were supposed to have 13 weeks of basic. But by the time we got there, they'd had such an influx of enlistees that it was 8 weeks. And I think we really got out of there in about 6 weeks because they had so many people that needed to go through basic training that were just enlisting. And they didn't have barracks for them. We slept in a tent all the time I was there. The first 8 weeks is short 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And they had people sleeping on the trains because they didn't have any place for them to go.
They weren't very prepared for you at that point.
They were not prepared. So, you know, they said, don't take anything with you except maybe a razor and a toothbrush if you got a favorite one or something like that. Well, we get down there and all the clothes we got is what we got on. So we marched and did our calisthenics, everything, and cowboy boots, tennis shoes, dress shoes, white shirts, T-shirts, whatever there was.
I guess they really prepared you for hard times.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Like an 8-week camp out.
Yeah.
Well, and so what was your training in? What did they train you to do?
Well, that was one thing the Air Force always talked about was we'll give you an aptitude test and then we'll place you where your qualifications are. So they sent me to administrative school, which was in Cheyenne, Wyoming. I was there for about, two or three months. And then they sent me home for a little furlough at Christmas time, and then I went back to Lackland Air Force Base for the balance of about 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I was in the administrative section of it, and what we're trying to do is look at people's interests and look at what we were, what schools we had available, and try to match them up. But that didn't always work because I had a friend here in town who was a photographer, and he was scheduled to go to flight school or aircraft engine mechanics, and he had less interest in that than anything. But fortunately, I was able to get him to go to photography school. So, you know, there's some things you're able to work out.
Absolutely.
Some things they just absolutely didn't work.
Well, some people just have to fill in the gaps, I guess.
That's just right.
Well, what about overseas duty? You spent a lot of time there. Did you spend any time overseas?
You know, I got married in June of 1951, and that was stationed at Lackland still at that time. And then we had a little one. Our daughter Jackie was born, and after she was 90 days old, I got put on the list to go overseas. And so in December of 1951, I reported to California to go overseas to Korea.
What was that duty like for you?
Well, I had good duty. It wasn't a place that you'd want to live all your life, but we were in South Korea, and the weather wasn't near as severe there as it was up in Northern Korea, and we had good duty. We had Quonset huts for barracks. We always had Bedcheck Charlie, who was the enemy flyovers to make sure we were okay, but they never had very much firepower, so we were never very much in danger. But one of the funniest things that ever happened to me in the service was I get into Korea. I go by boat from California to Japan. That takes 21 days. I didn't know I'd gotten the Navy, but I did. And then they flew us in a cargo plane over to Korea one January night, and it was cold, I will tell you. And they told me that I could go to the guest barracks, which was just down the street from where you reported in. And they gave me three or four army blankets and a mattress pad, mattress cover, which you don't realize how scratchy those wool blankets are until you don't have anything in between you. So I decided it was good to get inside that mattress cover, and that'd keep me from getting all scratched up with those wool. Well, about the time I get in it and get warm, why, the siren goes off and bed check Charlie's coming over. So you try to get out of a mattress bag and into the slit trench in a hurry, it don't work very well.
It was an experience. You had so you spent 4 years in total.
Yes.
And then when it was time to go, I assume they asked you to rehitch, but you decided to move on.
They tried to get everybody to reenlist. They had a bonus. It's not like it is today, but I was more interested in. When I enlisted, my idea was to go to the service and get the GI Bill and go to college. Well, I got discharged from the service in September of that year, 1954. And, of course, the college has already started, so I decided I could get a job for a couple, 3 months and then go to the winter quarter. Well, as it so happened, I went to work for Walnut Grove, had a good job, and worked there 31 years, never did get to college.
Well, worked out well anyway.
Worked out well for me.
Well, one place you did get here not too many months ago, I believe it was back at the tail end of October, you had an opportunity to hop on a plane with a number of other Southwest Iowa Korean War veterans to go on an honor flight to D.C. That had to be quite an experience.
Well, it was unbelievable because I didn't have the slightest idea what to expect because I'd never been to Washington, D.C. before in my life. And I knew it'd be a long day, but it turned out to be a 22-hour day, which was more than I could stand at my age now. But anyway, they flew us into Washington, D.C. We got there about 9:30 their time, and the weather was beautiful, and we went to all the memorials we could get to. We went to the Korean Veterans Memorial, which is unbelievable, and, you know, you probably could have spent the whole time there. Just look at the expression on those people's faces. But we got to see World War II Memorial. They're all real close there. The Lincoln Memorial's right there. Vietnam Memorial's right by it. But the one that impressed me most was the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And that'll make you cry in a hurry because you just can't believe those guys walking that thing since 1930. They've never missed a day. And they walk 20 steps one way and 20 steps the other way. And they do that for 30 minutes. And then they're relieved and then they get to come back on duty. But then they changed the wreath while we were there. And I tell you, when you can have silence like I heard in Washington, D.C., it's unbelievable that how respected. And I appreciate all the things that they're doing to get our young people aware of what it means to the sacrifice. The Korean War Memorial has a sign behind it that says, "Freedom is not free." And I just hope that our young people realize that it costs a lot. It costs a lot of lives. It costs a lot of money. It takes a lot of time. And but it was a great day. It was a fabulous day. And I'll sure never forget it, that's for sure.
Did you lose any friends at all in the Korean War?
No, I did not.
So you were one of the fortunate ones then.
That's right.
Very good. Yeah. Well, it had to be pretty exciting for you when that 4-year time slot was up. You were overseas, I assume, way away from your family during that time. That had to be pretty exciting with a young family to be able to come back home.
Well, I got back a little bit before I was discharged. Of course, they sent me by boat back to California again, another 21 days in the Navy. And then I was stationed for almost a year in about 60 miles outside of New York City. So I drove all the way from California to New York City and then drove back to Iowa when I got discharged. So I got to see most of the United States with him.
Time to go home.
That's
time
right.
Time to go home. Very good. Were there any other members of your unit at all, people that you had served with who were on this honor flight?
No. There was several people from Atlantic, but I had never served with them. Most of those people were in the Army and, you know, just a different time period for them. But it was a good time. This honor flight people need to be given a lot of credit for the effort that they put together to take 135 veterans plus, I think there was 26 caregivers. I had a wheelchair and they had a little Boy Scout lined up out in Washington, D.C. to push me around. So it was a great day for me. Got to see a lot of things I'd never see otherwise.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, when you think back on that 4-year service time for you, was it a good decision? Was it a good experience for you?
Well, I had good duty, and it was a good experience for me. It certainly taught me that there's a different way of life than what we're used to in Cass County in Atlantic, Iowa.
Grow up in a hurry.
That's right.
Very good. Carl Aldag, thanks so much for your time here this morning, and we salute you for your service as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.